Welcome to the Hacker Files, a special podcast series from Webroot, an open text company. I'm your host, Joe Panettiere, editor of Channel E2E and MSSP Alert. In each episode, we investigate various cybercrimes, the malware, the attack vector. Occasionally, we'll talk about the alleged culprits and, of course, the impact and the steps you need to take to safeguard SMB assets from such an attack. Today's episode explores cryptocurrency and cybercrime, really connecting the dots between those two items. My guest today is Tyler Moffitt, a senior security analyst at Webroot, an open text company. Tyler, great to catch up with you. How you been?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me, Joe. Always appreciate doing these podcasts.
You know what? They're super fun, and you always bring a lively conversation to the table, so I really appreciate it. Now, for listeners who may not have caught an earlier conversation or earlier podcast that you and I have had, tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your role at the company?
Right. So I am a senior security analyst with Webroot Open Text Company. I've been there over 10 years, basically worked in threat research, classifying malware in a database. That's done now. And I basically sort of work as a threat data liaison. I give presentations, do podcasts, conferences, you name it. And I sort of act as the threat data, getting it to the people who need it, whether they work in sales or marketing or comms. I'm sort of the liaison of the threat data.
Got it. Now, I know Webroot and your parent, OpenText, global company, global operation, but where are you personally based?
I am in the Broomfield office in Colorado. I live about 10, 15 minutes away, but yeah, Broomfield is our headquarter for Webroot for OpenText, and we've been there since 2011, and I miss going into the office for sure.
Well, hopefully you get back there soon. Now, are you born and raised in that area or somewhere else in the country?
Actually, believe it or not, I was born in Texas, and then my mother divorced my father and moved to England, and I lived in England for a little over a decade before moving to Colorado.
Oh, well, welcome back. It's good to have you in the States, and I know you've been here for decades, all kidding aside, but thanks for the background.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, Tyler, I have a confession. I need an education here. We promised listeners a discussion that really connects the dots between cryptocurrency and cybercrime. So first, a basic question. Are you referring to just Bitcoin or other forms of cryptocurrency?
Yeah, so when we talk about crypto, the main one, elephant in the room, Bitcoin. That's the first, the big, it's the major, it's the king. It owns the market cap, right? Whatever Bitcoin does, most of the altcoins are also going to follow. When it crashes, the rest crash. When it pumps, the rest pump. But there are plenty of other cryptocurrencies out there. I mean, literally hundreds of thousands. And many of them will likely, in the future, take over Bitcoin as far as its actual usefulness in using the blockchain technology in the future for applications. Bitcoin will likely just stay as a storage of wealth because there's so many more efficient and more appropriate technologies that have already been invented.
Okay. Here's another naive question for you. When we think of traditional currencies, right, like the dollar, we think of the United States, the euro, we think of Europe and the European Union. Are various cryptocurrencies tied to regions or any types of technologies, or is it just totally random?
Yeah, so basically fundamentals of cryptocurrency, pretty much most of them, they are decentralized by nature. And the consensus is the ledger system, if you will, of who send what to where and at what time and what amounts, all those, you know, timestamps and informations, that's all recorded by miners. And these miners are literally worldwide. It is the most hack-resistant database technology that's ever been created. That's true. So whenever you hear about Bitcoin being hacked, no one's hacking the protocol or hacking the blockchain. They're hacking people's coins who they've not stored securely because they've not kept that private key so secret that their coins were stolen. As far as the protocol is concerned, it was actual consensual and legitimate access of those coins as far as the protocol is concerned. But that's why Bitcoin's so popular, is because of the fact that it can't be stopped. It can't be censored. There is no central entity to go to. That's also why it's a double-edged sword. It can be dangerous for people who are new into this technology, who maybe make a mistake and send the address somewhere wrong. There's no take-backsies. There's no undo. There's no refunds. It's also why some governments don't like cryptocurrency, because they can't stop the payments like they can other bank accounts, you know? It's definitely free speech money, if you want to call it something like that. And that's why people think it's going to be skyrocketing in price.
So if I purchased cryptocurrency, which I have not, but if I did, basically I'm out of luck if I ever lose sort of the key to that digital vault to go access my crypto.
So yeah, there's many different ways of purchasing cryptocurrency and holding it. And this is a great intro, sort of crash course, what's going on. So when you buy cryptocurrency, you got to go to an on and off ramp. And most of the time, it's going to be something like a Coinbase or a CEX. Maybe you heard, everybody's pretty much heard of Coinbase. And this is an app, you create an account, right? And you create just a username and a password. And when you buy that cryptocurrency, you're currently, when they issue it to you, and you, after you give them dollars, you're holding it on the exchange. Now, with the exchange is in charge of those private keys. So you are trusting the exchange not to lose the private keys, right? Now, you have the option of transferring that cryptocurrency out and holding it on something like a hardware wallet, which a lot of people, very popular for people who have lots of cryptocurrencies, to hold their cryptocurrency and be in charge of it themselves. Again, right, there is danger in doing that, because if you aren't careful and you lose that hardware wallet, or you, however you're going about saving those private keys, if you were to lose them, yeah, then it's gone forever. That's why a lot of people who aren't competent enough that they can do that without losing the coins, they like to just hold their cryptocurrency on exchanges, because you're using an email and a password. However, there are risks associated with that. Every time we hear of a cryptocurrency exchange getting hacked and coins being stolen, those customers, they're the ones that get screwed. They're the ones that lose the crypto. And in most cases, there is no insurance. There's only a few cryptocurrency exchanges that even insure that crypto. And again, through no regulatory, through governments, they can sort of get away with saying, oh, I guess all the coins are gone and everybody's out of luck. But if you stick with, you know, the big names like Coinbase, they're going to be insured. And for the most part, they do a really good job of keeping your crypto safe. And it's just, it's easier for the everyday person, because then you're just remembering a username and a password. And if you ever forget it, you can go through a verification process, give them a picture of your driver's license, and they can give you your coins back, which I've had to do with my parents a few times and help them out. I've changed my stance. It really does depend on your technical capability. Absolutely, the most secure way is holding yourself, but there are so many horror stories you hear about people who have lost literally tens of millions of dollars because they've lost the key to it, or they didn't know Bitcoin would be worth this much, and they had thousands of them years ago. And they estimate around 4 million or so of the current 18 million in circulation. They estimate 4 million are lost forever because of people just being silly or stupid and losing those private keys.
Okay, here's another naive question for you about how this all works. Then we'll get a little bit more into the cybercrime. Sure. I think you just mentioned there, is it 18 million or 18,000?
A little over 18 million currently in circulation. There will only ever be 21 million in existence. The remaining have yet to be mined.
So why is 21 million the limit? And why don't they just produce more the way the US Fed keeps printing money?
Because this is a deflammatory asset. It was designed specifically on purpose by Satoshi Nakamoto. He wrote the white paper and mined the first coins into existence because of literally the Federal Reserve bailing out big banks in the 2008 financial crisis. This was to hedge against inflation, basically. The Federal Reserve is just going to keep printing money. Money printer go burr. They're going to keep doing it until the price of a double cheeseburger costs $5 from McDonald's in 5-10 years, or whatever the rate of inflation is. It's going to keep increasing. And so this is a deflammatory asset by nature. There will only ever be 21 million because that is how it was designed. And it was designed to where when they first started, there were zero coins in circulations, but when you first mined the block, you got 50 Bitcoins, and pretty much nobody was mining at all. And so the first adopters of this were getting 50 Bitcoins every 10 minutes. Now, the halving has happened so many times now that it's now 6.25 Bitcoins. And in the next few years, it's going to be 3.25 every 10 minutes released into circulation. And that keeps halving every 4 years until 21 million are distributed about 100 years from now. Who knows if we'll still be using Bitcoin in 100 years, but that is the plan. That is the rate. It's not changeable. There's nobody who can change that, and it's set in stone.
It reminds me a little bit of Earth and the amount of gold on Earth. There is a limited supply, and at some point, supply runs out. So in theory, as more and more people buy up the known gold, it becomes less plentiful, so the price goes up. And now there's sort of a bidding war to get your hands on the gold. So maybe it's similar with Bitcoin, I guess, as we get to this 21 million mark. One more naive question about how this all works, then we'll get to the cybercrime.
Sure.
The naive question is this. So we're at 18 million mined so far, or created so far. We're going to get to 21 million at some point. I never quite understand the whole mining phenomenon. To me, it sounds like a sort of an artificial game that's going on. Why aren't the 3 million Bitcoins just, you know, poof, appear instantly? Why is there this mining phenomenon, and what is it?
So the only way Bitcoin can work is if you have a ledger system. The only way that Bitcoin can function as digital gold or transfer of wealth and an asset is if you have somebody recording who's sending what between where, right? And you need miners to do that. you can't have it be centralized. That Bitcoin isn't designed even to be centralized. It's supposed to be decentralized. Literally, you could nuke the entire planet and Bitcoin would still work because they have mining nodes in space on satellites. Okay. So Bitcoin would still work. It's so decentralized. Out of all the cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin is the healthiest as far as the proof of work system. That's what they call it. When you have to have miners that are responsible for the ledger system of recording transactions, that is called a proof of work system. There are experimentations being done on different types of cryptocurrencies called a proof of stake system. But proof of work is wildly successful. It's inefficient as far as power and how much energy is being put in. But as far as it being, like I said, hack-resistant database technology, decentralized, and borderless, you could transfer $1 billion of Bitcoin and only pay $5-6 in fees. Now, you may pay $5-6 in fees to transfer $50. It doesn't really matter. It's just a transactional thing. Now, you can't do that with banks. If you want to transfer $1 billion, they're going to take six figures from you. They're probably going to take like 150, 200 grand, and that's any bank. And so this is why it directly competes with banks. Even if Bitcoin never functions as a purchase of coffee at Starbucks because it can't handle that many transactions per second, it's going to be a transfer of wealth for sure. And you definitely need the miners are crucial to this. And they're crucial to a lot of cryptocurrency. And it honestly goes hand in hand with what we're going to talk about with some of the crypto crime that's involved. But mining is essential. It may seem kind of weird, right? To be able to just have a whole bunch of graphics cards that you used to play games on. And then you decide, nope, I'm going to run this algorithm, this little double click, this executable, and it's going to max out my graphics card, take all the power it possibly can, heat up my room because it's using 100% power. And I'm rewarded every day with a small amount of crypto. Seems a little crazy, but that's how it's been working for 10 years. And that's why we have such a shortage on graphics cards.
We're recording this in late February, and we've seen a lot of volatility. Prices were above 50,000 at one point, then they drop 16%, give or take. You know, whenever you listen to this, I'm sure the price is going to be all over the place. Is there any relationship between the cybercrime trends as well as the volatility?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the halving that I mentioned previously, every 4 years, the reward for miners is halved, right? So that means that the price of Bitcoin has to increase to be worth it for the miners, spending all this power and equipment to mine Bitcoin. It has to increase in value on a long enough timeline. It has to, or else it all falls apart and it's not worth it. But as far as criminal activity, we start to see that peak on bull runs. So because of this four-year halving, every 4 years, the halving happens, every 4 years, we also have a bull run year. And the bull run year typically happens the year after the halving. So the halving happened May 2020, the most recent one, where it went from 12.5 Bitcoins to 6.25. That was a little less than a year ago. Now we are in 2021 and we are basically entered a bull run. What this means is we expect the Bitcoin price from its lowest point this year in January, which was around, I think it was around 20K or so. It might 10X, I'm not even kidding you, to 200K. And then it'll pop, absolutely will. But during this bull run where people or criminals or everybody or investors, speculative investors expect crazy volatile movements of 10X this year, you see criminals come out of the woodwork looking for mining cryptocurrency, whether it's on an executable payload on the desktop, whether it's mining through the browser, hijacking, whether they overtake a machine because they fished for credentials and have backdoor access to a machine because of, let's say, remote desktop. Most of the time, the most popular payload would have been ransomware. Put ransomware on the machine. If they pay it, great. But an option they have is, let's just mine cryptocurrency without any consent or them knowledge. Because again, ransomware, as we're all familiar with that business model, requires a knowledge that you've been hit with ransomware and consent that you know you're paying a ransom to get your files back, right? You know what you're doing. But when it comes to mining cryptocurrency, all that can be done in secret and in silence, and in many cases, unknown to the actual users. And the only way they might find out would be the resources being snagged on the machine or the power bill when they receive it. That's basically the only way they would be clued into it. And so that's where we see a lot of different types of attacks. And honestly, last bull run is where we first saw cryptojacking come into existence. This whole idea of mining cryptocurrency on the browser while you're visiting a web page without your consent. So we may see whole new types of attacks just developed this year just to snag cryptocurrencies in the same sort of way, which would be through mining, but some new ingenious way of delivering it.
Let's just say I'm in my home office, I'm browsing the web, I'm on a legitimate website. What harm is there to me if a hacker is using my system and or my browser to do some crypto mining? Is that what you're basically saying? It could be a risk. And then what's the risk there? What's the harm?
So it's probably the lowest risk out of any malware. I hate to break it to you. Like as much people want to talk about malware as scary, this would be the least scariest malware out there because it's not stealing any information from you. It's literally just stealing CPU cycles from your processor. That's it. So the only thing you'd be paying for, and they would steal it from you, is power, the power bill, the amount of power you put and pay every month for your computers. That is where you would see an increase. Now, on the individual level, on a consumer, even if just a couple of your machines were hit with crypto mining, and they usually are smart and sneaky about it to where they only crank it up to 100% CPU usage when you're not using the computer, and they can tell through keyboard and mouse inputs if you're using the computer, right? Yeah. So if they're being sneaky about it and get away with it, which is how they do it, I mean, it's going to be like $5 a month increase per computer, most likely. Maybe a little more if you have a graphics card that they can earn more on. But where it really takes off is when they go after like big giant servers. They get a big environment, like a medium to large size business that have like servers that have Xeon processors that can get much more CPU cycles and make more money on a longer time frame. That's where they can make quite a bit of money.
Got it. Okay. So I'm much clearer now on crypto mining and the crime around that. Here's a hypothetical for you. Do you see crypto as a method for money laundering? So these cyber hackers may get a hold on cryptocurrency and then use that illegally begotten money to make legitimate purchases, cars, houses, et cetera, to clean sort of, we're seeing more and more legitimate businesses out there accept crypto as a form of currency. So I'm wondering if laundering is going to become a big problem.
It already is. Crypto is so good at this. Like, so to start out with, when Bitcoin was first released, you didn't really need to launder it. It was just Bitcoin. No one really knew who you were. And it was fine. You're sending X address to Y address. No one knew the identity. That's changed now. So Bitcoin is a public ledger system. So anybody can view any Bitcoin address, see all the transactions, all the amounts, and every time anything was sent. Now, you don't know the name of the person. It's just a string of characters, right? But absolutely, there have been so many projects like Chain Analysis and KYC, which is called Know Your Customer with exchanges, where they can link addresses with names and people, and then go, they sent this money here, they sent it here. So for the most part, I would say Bitcoin is not anonymous. Don't expect to be able to charge a ransomware. They pay you in Bitcoin, and then you send that to your Coinbase to cash out. You're going to get caught, absolutely. And that's how many of these guys have been getting caught now. But there are other coins out there that specifically have a private ledger system. So specifically, Monero. Maybe you've heard of Monero. Its abbreviation is XMR, but it is just like Bitcoin, almost identical to Bitcoin, except for the fact that the ledger system is private, meaning nobody can, outside the two people of a transaction, the sender and receiver, nobody else can see that transaction or any details about it. And that makes it completely anonymous. So when it comes to laundering, many, many criminals, what they'll do is they'll go to these exchanges that don't have KYC or know your customer or don't have any dollars on the exchange. Because that's when you have to have regulation and all these things recorded. If you just go to a cryptocurrency exchange that just takes cryptocurrency and you can exchange it for other cryptocurrency, that's called token swappers. And they require no sort of verification whatsoever. You just need an email address and that's it. And so there you send your Bitcoin and then you trade it for Monero and then you send your Monero out. And then at that point, it's basically laundered. And then what you can do is then send that Monero to any other exchange, change for Bitcoin, and then sell. And those coins are essentially clean. But that is pretty much the standard process we see for most criminals who are laundering their Bitcoin as they go to XMR, which is why many, many, many crypto exchanges that deal with dollars and, you know, the common on and off ramps do not handle XMR. They're doing their best not to honor cryptocurrencies that have private ledger systems because of the huge laundering problems.
All right, Tyler, thank you so much for the crash course and some of the risks out there. You've really opened my eyes to what's going on. For our listeners who are trying to figure out, well, how do I avoid these crypto scams amid all this hype? What are some steps that they should be taking to mitigate their risks?
Absolutely. Always want to be sure, especially when you get into any new groundbreaking internet technology asset that's competing with the big banks and all this type of stuff. There's going to be lots of info you're going to be reading, especially this year, left and right, up and down, everybody for it, everybody against it. You're really not going to know what's going on. So the best advice that I can give you is do your own research. anything on this podcast is not financial advice. It's just letting you know past trends, right? But as far as avoiding scams, absolutely. First and foremost, going on social media, there's going to be so many plants out there. People telling you like they're pretending to be Barack Obama or Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos. Remember that Twitter hack where they actually accessed those accounts? And they basically said, we're feeling so great right now. Send us 0.1 Bitcoin and we'll send you back 0.2. Or for however much Bitcoin you send us, we'll send you back double. Those are all scams. They never happen. Nobody ever gets their money. You just send it to them and then they keep it. And there's nothing you can do. There's no refund you can, like I mentioned earlier, there's no central entity to go to say, whoopsie, I made a mistake, undo it. You can't do that. And so that is what's going to happen. There's going to be tons and tons of scams out there or hedge fund managers promising you, you give me all the Bitcoin you have and I'll generate 1% per day profit. Avoid that. I recommend if you're going to buy cryptocurrency, you hold it yourself and you decide and do the research yourself. If you're technical enough, when you buy the cryptocurrency, to store in a hardware wallet. So there's Trezor, Ledger, BitFi is my favorite as far as hardware wallets. They're really, really good at explaining to you how you are securing your cryptocurrency and how you're in charge of it and nobody can take it away. But if you feel you're not technical enough and you want to just hold an exchange, that's fine too. Just know that if you break any laws or for any reason, you know, for some whatever possible future scenario, you break any terms of service with Coinbase or whoever you're holding your cryptocurrency with, they control the crypto, not you. And no matter how much money you've given them, they can lock away your cryptocurrency forever because of some dispute you may have with them, which has happened to other people. And there are horror stories that you should look at and read about. But this is, again, there are risks associated with such a high volatile asset. The gains could definitely be there if you're just looking to get into for money. But a lot of people see the potential as far as just groundbreaking internet technology. But we're in the infancy stages, you know, like this is like it's 1985 and I'm telling you about the internet. So you got to be careful and do your own research.
Okay, before we wrap up this conversation, here's some information about a free trial software offer from Webroot. To find the free trials and more episodes of this podcast, simply visit webroot.com/hackerfiles. Again, that's webroot.com/hackerfiles. From that link, you'll find Webroot's free trial software, along with more editions of this podcast. I'll tell you what, Tyler, thank you again for a great education. What a topic. Always fast moving, always informative. I really appreciate everything you shared today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Always appreciate joining these as well.